Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I think it's kind of interesting over the course of an offseason about how a narrative kind of evolves and changes. And I think you've certainly seen some of that with Georgia football fans here over the course of the last couple of months. We've talked about that some here on Dog Nation Daily, where what the national media kind of pays attention to and what the fans start to believe sort of feel like two different things here. And for a moment, I'm not really talking about how many games Georgia's going to win or how many games Georgia's going to lose. I'm talking about the kind of team Georgia's going to be when the fall begins. Now, obviously, most of the media attention, and I'm just as guilty of this as anyone, focuses in on the Georgia offense. And will Jacob Eason, as a sophomore quarterback, will he be a much better signal caller? What will the return of Nick Chubb, Sony Michel mean for the Georgia offense in terms of having those veteran running backs back? When I looked back on G-Day, I focused in on a lot about what I thought was the pretty impressive performance by the Georgia wide receivers. That was the real dominant narrative for me coming off the spring, and for the most part, I've kind of walked lockstep with a lot of the other national media in focusing in on the Georgia offense. But if you really pay attention to what fans say, and I mean at the forum at forum.dognation.com, and the comment section we broadcast on Facebook Live, reaching out to me on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily, really any place where fans might congregate and talk a little Georgia football, what you see start to emerge is a narrative among fans where there is a pretty strong belief right now that this Georgia team in 2017, no matter how big of a name Jacob Eason might be, and no matter how big of a name Nick Chubb might be, no matter how interesting it is typically to talk about offense, this is a Georgia team in 2017 that's going to be led by its defense. And as a way of kind of crystallizing that and demonstrating exactly how true that might be, I thought when Chip Towers joined us on Dog Nation Daily yesterday, he kind of had an interesting synopsis of that whole thing of, given what happened in 2016, when Georgia looks ahead to 2017, he should probably look towards its defense. Here's how Chip said it yesterday.
Just based on what we know they're going through on offense, still a young quarterback and a sophomore, Jacob Eason, and obviously in a transitive state on the offensive line, I don't think you can necessarily expect, you know, you're going to have a high-powered offense to go out there and outscore everybody. That's not going to be the way. If Georgia's going to be successful this year, it's going to be because of what the defense does. And look, it's an old-school formula, but it can be done if you have a dominant defense. And I think, you know, a very important side note to that is good special teams. But defense and special teams can get you through.
Yeah, so listen, there is a aspect of what Chip says there that's obviously true, but there's also an aspect that I am tempted to kind of push back on a little bit. Because what I have said in the past here on Dog Nation Daily is I don't believe that Georgia in 2017 is supposed to be like what Florida was in 2015 and 2016. Now, Georgia fans would take that result, winning the East, getting to Atlanta in a spot in the SEC championship game. That'd be an improvement of where Georgia's been the last few years. But the notion that, hey, Georgia's going to lean completely on that old-school formula, there's an element to me on that that's a little disappointing. That if this is just a team about special teams and just a team about defense, if this is not a team that takes a big step forward offensively, then there's an element of which Georgia as a coaching staff isn't living up to its billing. And certainly Georgia in terms of its recruiting profile over the last half decade is not living up to its billing. This is supposed to be a more balanced team than that. This is supposed to be a team that's not a defense dragging the offense across the finish line, but able to do a little bit of everything. However, while that may be the negative assessment, the more positive aspect of what Chip talks about there is that the pieces are in place to see improvement on the special teams and to see improvement on the defense. As a matter of fact, when you think about what Georgia may be able to do this season in those two phases, it really gives Georgia a chance to beat just about every team on its schedule with those two elements alone. Here's a little more of Chip talking about that very fact.
The makeup of this recruiting class tells me, I mean, I think there's going to be enough of these guys that could be difference makers on special teams when you're talking about returns, when you're talking about coverage, to make them special on special teams. And then you add to that the defense when you're talking about a front seven that I think is going to be among the best in the league, got to be, then you've got a chance to beat anybody you play. And I think that's the way Georgia's made up. That's what I'm seeing.
And listen, as a fan, no matter how you prefer football to be played, that last bit from Chip there is the point that matters more than anything. Giving you a chance to beat almost everyone you play. Listen, all you can ask for is a chance to win these games, and it sounds like Georgia's going to get them. But a couple more things about what Chip has to say there that I think are important. You know, on yesterday's show, we talked a good bit about Nate McBride coming off his performance in the track and field state championships in Georgia when he showed that blazing speed that made him such a coveted linebacker prospect when he signed with Georgia back in February. When you think about him in 2017, to go back to what Chip's point was, the recruiting class was so good that some of those guys are going to be contributing on special teams right away. And a guy like McBride may be an example of that. Probably not in that linebacker rotation, at least to start the season as a freshman, but as a guy from week one who may be using some of that speed to contribute on special teams. And I've always believed that's the formula for special team success. Have enough good players on your roster that they eventually show up on special teams, and all of a sudden that aspect of the game starts to rise because all of a sudden you're talking about more talent there in that group. And speaking of talented groups, you also hear Chip there talk about that front seven for Georgia. And, you know, yesterday Kirby Smart, when he did that SEC coaches teleconference call, he talked about Trent Thompson being back, taking classes again this summer. Add him to a group, Jonathan Ledbetter. You know, ESPN of the day called Ledbetter Georgia's most improved player over the course of the spring. Think about Lorenzo Carter, Davin Bellamy coming back. Carter's the guy that's shown up in like the second round of some of these 2018 mock drafts. When you think front seven for Georgia, you do think about a multitude of incredibly good players. And it's not just the starters. In some cases, you're talking about even some of the depth behind those starters having a chance to have really big seasons. As a matter of fact, Chip, yesterday when he was on Dog Nation Daily, says when he gets the overall look of the Georgia defense in mind, he sees a lot of potential all-conference performers. Here's Chip once again.
This is a defense that returns 28 Lettermen overall as it is, and, you know, they're just not any Letterman. You know, I can quickly run down the list of Georgia players, and not just starters. I'm not just talking about the starters. I'm talking about some of the players that are rolling in and rotated in and that kind of stuff. And you can easily come up with 11, 12 players who I would put in the category of potential all-conference players, and that's a big deal.
I think that's true with a caveat. Obviously, every Georgia fan likes the defensive line. Every Georgia fan, I think, likes the linebacking core. There's a lot of talent in both those groups. I think the secondary, at least how we think of it on paper, leaves something to be desired. We'll see that group develops over the course of the summer into the season. That may be the one sort of fall-behind issue that truly determines whether or not this Georgia defense can be great. But listen, the bottom line is, if that secondary does develop the way that the defensive line appears to be in pretty good shape already, and the linebacking core too, then you're talking about a Georgia defense in 2017 that could remind you of some of the great Georgia defenses of the past. I mean, listen, you know, I'm just a little bit too young to remember the old Junkyard Dog days of Irk Russell. I certainly know the stories, and I certainly have seen plenty of pictures of Irk Russell, the defensive coordinator back then, with the blood trickling down his forehead. I'm absolutely old enough, though, to remember the Brian Van Gorder defense of the early 2000s and the kind of throwback unit that was to those great Georgia defenses of the early 80s. And I think Dog fans remember those times, if you're old enough to remember the early 80s and old enough to remember the early 2000s, as really fun times for the program. And it wasn't just success on the field, but it was an identity for the team. It sounds like a lot of Georgia fans are craving a return of that identity in 2017. A program led by defense, going out and pitching something close to a shutout in some of the games that matter most. And with some of the talent that Chip Towers talked about yesterday on Dog Nation Daily, Georgia may be getting very close to doing just that. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us on the program today. Back on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Broadcasting every day on video on Dog Nation's Facebook page, Dog Nation Daily. We'll do Dog Nation Daily Live for you there. Good to have you with us in video form, and of course the podcast form. You can check us out the audio version at dognation.com or on iTunes. You can subscribe there, and if you do, certainly we appreciate your ratings and reviews. By the way, speaking of dognation.com, please make sure you go there if you haven't already and sign up for your chance to win our Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to South Bend. The giveaway is courtesy of Kroger, and this is a huge, huge giveaway that's going to be live here for the rest of this week. It goes dark, I want to say, like 11:59 p.m. on Friday night. So hurry up and get in for your chance to win while you still can. This includes more than just the spot in the Dog Nation Invasion bus from Chicago over to South Bend for the big one there this September. You also have your chance to win airfare, tickets to the big game in South Bend, lodging as well. It's all brought to you courtesy of Kroger. It's our Dog Nation Invasion to South Bend coming up in September. By the way, speaking of Kroger, make sure you check out Kroger.com. You got graduation parties coming up. You got some of these great summer cookouts coming up. You got big plans this spring. Whatever you have in terms of items to throw on the grill or maybe one of those great desserts, fresh watermelon, whatever you need for your spring summer plans, it's all right there for you at Kroger. You can check them out online at Kroger.com. We'll have Jeff's intel coming up. A lot of recruiting news to get into with Jeff. Some of it good for UGA, too, by the way. This 2018 class starting to maybe take shape in an interesting way. We'll hear from Jeff coming up on that in just a moment. Before that, though, let me take a moment to also give you our Gator Hater Countdown. Now 164 days away from Georgia, Florida, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party coming up in Jacksonville this October. We believe that's the game this season and every season that matters more than any other for the Georgia Bulldogs, because we believe a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. And if you're like us, if you think that, then the best way for you to show that's check out shopdognation.com. Get your very own Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirt. I've got mine on today, by the way, doing the show. If you're watching me on video, you're seeing this right now. Dog Nation Daily logo on the sleeve, Gator Hater license plate on the front. A great way to let Georgia fans know that the Georgia-Florida rivalry is about to change. Let those Gators know that the Dogs are coming for them this October. Hope you check that out at shopdognation.com. We'll give you free shipping on that. It is great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. Hope you enjoy Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insight.
And, of course, every interview with Jeff this time of year is always very busy. There's so much going on, a lot to get to. Jeff, I'll start with this, if you don't mind. First of all, I got to say good morning, and thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily. But let me start with something that you wrote the other day about a former UGA commitment. That's Adam Anderson. You had a chance to catch up with the linebacker from Rome. And, you know, when I read his quotes to you, it certainly seemed like the door might still be open for Anderson to at least consider somewhere else other than the LSU commitment he currently has. We've seen a couple players around SEC country recommit to programs here recently. What would you put as a percentage chance or maybe a likelihood that maybe Anderson at one point would reconsider recommitting to UGA?
Wow. Good morning to you, Brandon. You're throwing a 99-mile-an-hour Nolan Ryan fastball heater up the gut this morning.
Yeah, right out of the gate here. Why not?
Why not? I would say the chances would be zero for Adam Anderson. Well, I'm going to go 10%, but I would say the chances might go up to 40% if Georgia would also offer his teammate Jamarcus Chapman. That's the talented defensive lineman also on the Rome D-line. That I think ended up with pretty well close to 50 offers, maybe not just not Georgia and Alabama in the SEC, I think. But Adam, you know, Brandon, he's just a different young man. And what I mean different is, like, I remember talking to him when he was committed to Georgia at the state championship game back in December, and he wrote he said some very ambiguous things, like, he just kind of looked at his decision like there's a lot of time, almost, he said, like over a year before he had to make his decision. And he had a lot of time to look at other schools, to check places out. He wasn't really locked into his decision, and if something changed, it changed, then he could make a change with Georgia. And it was just the way he said it. It was almost like a young man that really, I just knew Adam not to be very immersed in the recruiting. He wasn't, you know, a visit guy, a camp guy. He wasn't a guy that's on social media. And he just had a very, I guess the way I would put that is he had a very 2008, 2007 way of looking at his recruiting. And so when he told me, those things after the state championship game, I guess if I was a reckless reporter, I would, you know, throw out there that the headlines that say Georgia commit wavering or Georgia commit, you know, feeling, you know, not so sold on Georgia. But I just didn't think that was true to how he felt. I did not think he was making a statement. He was he talked about that, Brandon, maybe in the same type of tones as he was talking about three or four of his teammates suggesting what they were going to have for lunch. I mean, it didn't seem like he was trying to make a statement. It didn't seem like there was anything wrong with Georgia. It basically was the tone of, well, I have a lot more looking to do, and I will take the time to look if I think like I need the time to look. It was, the message was somewhat pro Georgia and somewhat pro, I got a long way and no pressure to figure this out. So then when I spoke to him again And this was probably the third or fourth time I'd spoken to Adam. When I spoke to him again on the Nike regional in Charlotte, and that was probably the fifth time, it was just the same type of guy. He just does not seem as cloaked and defined by his decision as others would. Now, I think he's not a flighty young man. I don't think he's a guy that's going to hop from school to school, or he's going to have visit love wherever he goes. But I just feel that Anderson is a guy that I think truly the main thing is what he told me and is what I reported was he made the decision to flip to Georgia because it flipped from Georgia to LSU because it felt like home, and also because he had the chance to play with his good lifelong friends in Jamarcus Chapman and also Jamarius Griffin. So I really think that with his situation, it's really about playing with his boys anywhere that's a good time, big time school in the SEC, rather than LSU has this, and this better than Georgia, and so on and so forth.
Owen Popo, the big prospect out of Grayson for 2019, kind of came out with his top 10 recently, and Georgia was in that mix, but you've followed this story for a while. It seems like Georgia's just had a hard time kind of ever really being anything as, you know, could even be constituted a leader for Popo's services. As we get, you know, a little closer to his process now that he's officially naming his top 10 leaders, are things changing here between Popo and Georgia at all? I mean, what are the chances that Georgia could kind of climb the ladder with him before his ultimate decision is finally made?
Well, Brandon, I know your definition of climbing the ladder would be somewhere from like third or fourth to first.
Exactly.
Or third to first. And I think Georgia can climb the ladder. I think they have climbed the ladder from maybe seventh to somewhere around fifth or fourth. But those three schools that are in front of Georgia are going to be pretty hard to leapfrog. And, you know, I think Owen is a natural safety. That's what I think he is. I don't think he's a linebacker. He's been classified as an athlete so many times, and I just think he's just going to be a very special safety, you know, a hybrid box player for college football. I think the most tremendous thing I can say about Owen is he came into the opening regional in Charlotte just fresh off of some labrum surgery, I believe, where he had to get right, and he had no training, he had no preparation, he had no, you know, 10 days of gut-busting shuttle drills or anything else like that to get ready. He came in hot to the Charlotte Regional, and he looked to be – he was a linebacker MVP. He was a special athlete. He tested well with spark ratings and everything else. And I'm guessing Owen was probably 80-85% at the most there, and that just shows what type of athlete he is. Now, everybody is going to focus on the fact that he's at Grayson, and so many of his other teammates that he hangs with very tightly are already committed to Florida State. And that would be the school that most people should look to as having the edge right now for the number one player in Georgia for 2019. But I think this is a story for the Georgia fan that leans into a lot of these things. This is a story where Georgia has really never felt comfortable and really never felt locked in for Owen's chances for quite some time. And it almost seems like a lot of the fans I talk to and the ones we relate to and interact with on our message board, Brandon, most people are already kind of chalking up Owen Popo to Florida State, and if it's not Florida State, then it would probably be Alabama or something like that.
So let me ask you this, and I may have some of these facts wrong. It's Wanya Morris, the offensive lineman that's from Grayson that's committed to Florida State, right? And it seems like you wrote something the other day about, you know, maybe Morris's relationship with Florida State softened somewhat, and I kind of read into that. Well, maybe that means the same thing for Popo at some point in time. Is that just too much hopeful reading into, or is there any connection there whatsoever?
Well, his Owen's best friend, Kenyatta Watson II, is also committed to Florida State, as well as you've also got True Thompson down there, who's also committed to Florida State on the Grayson team and in the same class. And then you also have Wanya Morris, who is committed to Florida State as well. And I think, Brandon, of all the guys that you're looking for with any sort of Georgia closing or Georgia lean or late, I kind of think that Morris might be the guy that might eventually would be the most likely guy Georgia could bend the ear and perhaps pull out of Tallahassee, because he does like Pittman a lot. I think, you know, there's so many things we can update and write about, but Wanya told me at Charlotte that Coach Pittman basically told him after he committed to Florida State. Coach Pittman, you know, Georgia's, you know, very, very popular and very well-known offensive line coach, basically said, if you think I'm letting you get away from the state of Georgia without a big, long, drawn-out 15-round fight, you're crazy. I'm just going to keep recruiting the stew out of you, and we're going to see what happens by the time you're ready to decide. And I do feel that Morris, he's very comfortable with Georgia. And Morris even told me matter-of-factly, I remember him saying, as he said, I'm committed to Florida State. I like everything I'm hearing from Florida State. I like the fit at Florida State. But he said, the school that recruits me the best down the stretch up until the point that I make my decision. And he said, from now until the time he signs the dotted line, he said, that will be the school he goes to, the school that recruits him the best down the stretch. And it's not just Florida State lock, stock, and barrel and go ahead and put that one away and throw away the key. There will be some intrigue there, I think, with Wanye Morris in Georgia. Maybe not so much with a guy like Owen Popo.
All right. So speaking of Owens and offensive linemen, you've also written about Owen Condon, the big offensive lineman from out at Oklahoma. Is this the appropriate replacement for Max Ray in the 2018 class? I mean, obviously you may have preferred Ray, but Ray had a choice to make and he made it. In terms of a replacement for Ray, how do you feel like Condon would fit in if ultimately he chooses UGA?
Well, he's a big guy, and he's got great character, and you know, the Georgia coaches like his upside on and off the field. He's about 6'7 and about 305. A lot of the sites get his weight wrong, and some of our readers point out is like, you know, the young man needs some more meat on his bones, but lots of people use some dated information for his heights and weights. He just told me that he dropped some weight to go down to 305, and Condon told me in no short order, which was the type of things that do indicate it's time to write a story and to let people know where things are with him, is he said that Coach Pittman and Coach Smart have told him that they don't know what they're going to do at the tackle spot in the class of 2018 if he does not choose Georgia. Now, Condon's going to take a really big visit to Georgia on June the 10th, which will be his second trip and his first full trip since he's gotten the offer from Georgia. He had a really good visit back in March, I believe. And now this will give Georgia the opportunity, as he's been told by Pittman and Smart, for them to roll out the red carpet for him. And that's a trip where, you know, Condon told me he already wanted to make his decision by the end of June. That's a commit there where I think Condon should very well be placed on commit watch should he still feel the same way about Georgia going into that visit as he does right now.
All right, Mark Lee on Facebook Live, who's watching, and says, I haven't given you an opportunity to give us enough good news in the conversation today. So let me go to this player's name, because to me, when I read this at DogNation.com, I kind of took this as good news. It seems like Georgia's kind of moving in a positive direction here with Kyrus Jackson, a pretty good wide receiver prospect for the class of 2018. Is that a misread? It seems like the relationship between the Dogs and Jackson is pretty good right now, right?
It is. It is very good. And, you know, we actually, Brandon, you know, you're Adam Stradamus again today. You stumbled on one of the blog topics today on Centel Denzel. We're going to write a lot about Kyrus Jackson today. And I think a little tease is one thing that fans will listen to and maybe they'll lock their ears down on is that Kyrus told me in no short order, I'm not going to say the term package deal because everybody goes crazy with all that, but I'm just going to say that Kyrus Jackson told me definitively that he and Trey Hill, the nation's number two guard out of Houston County, in the 478, that rapidly growing 478 club for Bulldogs at the University of Georgia, they told me definitively, at least Jackson did, that they will go to the same school. They talk about it all the time. They talk about it every day. Those guys, when they make their decision, probably some point, maybe October-ish, when those guys make their decision, that they will no doubt choose the same school. And if you start looking up and down the list of options, I would say that Georgia is pretty well placed, at least among the top two or three schools, at least for both of those guys. Whereas, you know, the other guys, the other schools on their list don't really match up as well as Georgia does. And the thing to consider here with Kyrus Jackson is Georgia has made him the priority receiver, I would say, for the 2018 class for quite some time, even going back to last fall. And that's the sort of recruiting journey that James Coley has taken with Kyaris Jackson that certainly means a lot. And, you know, I'm sure Dawgs fans will like to read that, you know, kind of like everything that I learned from a really good conversation with Stephon Wynn at IMG as well. I mean, that's a guy right now, Clemson legacy, who, if you read all the tea leaves and read all the information, he's really going to take three big visits this summer, one to Alabama, one to Ohio State, and one to Georgia. But there's so many factors there. Perhaps the biggest is Trey Scott that really gives Georgia an in with Mr. Stephon Wynn.
Yeah, let me move on and talk about that for a moment, because I thought it was interesting that Wynn was talking about Trey Scott, but Rick Sandage also, who I guess included Georgia in his, what, top 11 recently, I think he released that. The fact that both these guys are talking about Trey Scott is pretty interesting, in that Scott's, as an assistant, is a guy who we don't really know his recruiting profile yet, because he's only been on the job for a brief period of time, but a couple of them pretty important prospects have both kind of mentioned Scott as kind of weighing on them pretty heavily there. I take that to be kind of an interesting endorsement of his early work as UGA's defensive line coach, right?
Yeah, you nailed it, Brandon, right on the head there. Both of them said tremendous things about Scott. Scott was kind of on the ground floor with both of those guys and when he was recruiting for North Carolina. And then, I guess like a good game of poker, man, or something like that, the offers maybe got a little too rich for Trey Scott's blood when he was recruiting for North Carolina. And then even at Ole Miss. And then all of a sudden, I guess I'll continue this metaphor out, man. All of a sudden, you know, Trey Scott gets some more financial backing and a sponsor with a bigger offer, bigger schools, bigger stadium, bigger profile like the University of Georgia. And then all of a sudden, Trey Scott is back at the table for Stephon Wynn, and then even Rick Sandage, and he's got a pretty good stash in front of him because he can play a lot more hands with all the resources and the name value and the prestige of the University of Georgia. I think it's very interesting how Georgia has been able to kind of cash in on Trey Scott's invested relationships with a couple of these Carolina boys. And now they're in a really good spot for these two big time trench prospects now that he's at Georgia.
All right, a couple guys in the comment section, Jeff, have asked about Daniel Falele. Mickey Brady, Justin Vetters, both wanting to know about this young man at IMG Academy. Pretty unusual backstory in that, my goodness, he looks like the best football player you've ever seen in terms of his, you know, physical build. He's tall. He's got, you know, great weight. Seems to have it all kind of put in the right places. But he's essentially played no football at all before kind of coming to IMG. So how excited should UGA fans, or just college football fans in general, because there's obviously a lot of programs chasing down Falele at the moment. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. But how excited should people be about a guy like this who looks the part but really doesn't have any experience?
You're right, Brandon. You did your homework there. He has played zero football. I think the football and the snaps he plays this fall for IMG will be his first actual legit reps. And I'm going to say this definitively, Brandon, he's the best 6'9", 390-pound offensive tackle who's never played a game that I've ever seen, man. I can say that. I can say that definitively. I guess I can check off a few more filters if I wanted to and add something in there about Australia. But the guy had a 23-inch vertical at the opening at 400 pounds. He's 6'9". He is enamored with how well Sam Pittman has been recruiting him. He likes that a lot. He told me Georgia will most likely get an official visit in the fall. And that's going to be interesting, Brandon, because you've not heard this before. I've not written this before. Falele is not going through some great summer excursion where he's going to click off like 19 schools in the summer and figure it out. That young man's going to be in Australia. He's going to be back home chilling. Probably chasing down some kangaroos or you know, trying to block them on the edge with a swim move or whatever. And then he's going to come back to IMG. He's going to play his senior season of football, and he's going to use his five official visits to kind of figure out his decision. And there were other schools that we were talking about, like a Tennessee, for instance, and he wasn't sure that he could give, at this time, Tennessee an official visit, but he was quite sure that he could give Georgia an official visit. So, you know, right there, Daniel Falele, I mean, I think it's the perfect progression for Georgia at the tackle spot, because if Andrew Thomas plays well, like I think he will, and Isaiah Wilson plays well, like I think he will, Georgia will have two young tackles, and they won't really have to rush anybody they sign in 2018. That's Owen Condon or Daniel Falele into a starting spot or into a key rep spot. So that will be good for them to stash Daniel away so he can grow. And, I mean, Brandon, I'm going to give you your wildest dream right now.
Please.
2019 Georgia offensive line. Your left tackle is Isaiah Wilson, who is all at 6'7" and a half and 345.
I like
it. Chiseled block of granite. Perhaps your other right tackle is going to be Andrew Thomas, 6'5", 330 pounds, a technician who knows everything that's need to go about hands, punch, placement. And then their top backup, could that be 6'9", 367-pound Daniel Falele, whose vertical leap is up to 29 inches in the Georgia strength and conditioning program?
Yeah, listen, I like it.
Getting off the bus, I don't think anybody's going to ever be able to pull that. We don't get any push up front, or we don't scare anybody coming off the bus anymore when you can go Isaiah Wilson and Daniel Falele right off the bus, and you're talking there. Those would be two pretty effective NBA power forwards, man. So that's how Georgia's changing on the offensive line.
Well, listen, Jeff, here's all I can say to you. Now, I consider you a good friend, so I'm going to give you a piece of advice. You know, Michael Lewis wrote The Blind Side and made probably like a gazillion dollars telling Michael Oher's story at Ole Miss from a few years ago. If that's a best-selling book, then a guy moving from Australia over to the United States to play college football and all the experiences that he's probably – really witnessing for the very first time, I've got to imagine there's a book in this one for Falele as well. So if he does end up coming to Georgia, write the book, turn it into a bestseller. We'll make a movie out of it. I'll make a cameo appearance, and we'll all go buy beach houses. How about that? Does that sound like a good idea?
Beach houses sounds great, Brandon. But tell me this: who's going to play Sandra? Who's the Sandra Bullock character in this one? I mean, you got to sit there and think for a minute, and then you got to go. Which actor is big enough to play 6'9", Australian, and 390 pounds? There's very few thespians in the entire world. And, hey, ding, 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 we got the word thespian in the Dog Nation Daily for the first time ever.
So, yeah, if you had that on your bingo card today, you're a winner.
That's right. But, I mean, what a story. I got to imagine if you serve him a Bloomin' Onion or cheese fries or something on his official visit, aren't you automatically getting dissed and crossed off the list right there, I bet?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, that's not really your intel. And by intel, I don't mean Centel's intel. I mean actual, intel from a college that does this. Because Outback Steakhouse, I've been told, is while we love it, it's maybe not the most authentic Australian food, you know?
Maybe not the most authentic Australian food. I tell you what, Brandon, you spoke your mind and still reserved the right for Outback to be a potential sponsor for Dog Nation Daily one day.
Listen, Jeff, the gears are always turning when it comes to stuff like that, I promise you.
Well, he's definitely not a shrimp on the Barbie, what Georgia used to have maybe on its offensive line compared to Isaiah Wilson and Daniel Falele going forward.
Jeff, that is really funny. I appreciate that. Well, it's always great to have you on Dog Nation Daily. We had some folks in the comments section asking about your big Wednesday night Facebook Live conversation brought to you by Kroger. We know that'll be back tomorrow. Is that 8:15 p.m.? Is that when people can expect to see that?
Usually it is. And some people have asked me, why in the world is it 8:15 and not 8 o'clock or something more regular? Man, I got kids to put.
I got to at least try
to have them tucked in by 8:10 so I can hurry up and get in front of the Facebook Live and make sure all the batteries are charged up.
Yeah, listen, I know exactly where you're coming from on that. Well, we'll look forward to checking that out. Also, you've had some great stuff in the forum as well, forum.dognation.com. You continue to be putting exclusive content in there that you can't find on the regular pages at dognation.com. I love reading that too. And, Jeff, we'll look forward to catching up with you here on Dog Nation Daily a little later on in the week.
Yes, sir, man. Be well. Have a great week.
Good stuff there from Jeff Centel. We'll do the SEC through.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Always love Jeff Centel on Dog Nation Daily. Really fun stuff from him. And, of course, he's going to be a part of our Dog Nation invasion to South Bend coming up in September. One of our sponsors for that is, of course, Larceny Bourbon, a 92-proof weeded small batch bourbon made from 200 barrels or less that are hand-selected by their master distillers from the finest barrels in the rickhouse. Unlock the smoothest today at LarcenyBourbon.com. Larceny reminds you to think wisely. Drink wisely. And by the way, before I go to the SEC through here, how about Jeff noticing me trying to leave the door open for an Outback sponsorship on Dog Nation Daily. We've probably spent a little too much time together if he's picking up on those subtle clues. Check us out this afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, SEC Country Live on the SEC Country Facebook page. Some of the stories that I know that we're going to be talking about. Pat Dye has a suggestion. He wants to put Auburn in the SEC East and Missouri in the SEC West. Now, first of all, I'm in favor of this. I would actually take it a step further, but just on at face value, I'm totally in favor of this. There's an element of when sports completely flies in the face of what we all know to be geographically true. There's an element to me that I find that incredibly annoying. You know, I grew up as a child when the Braves were in the National League West and the Falcons were in the NFC West. That never made any sense to me whatsoever. The Hawks were in the Central Division. You know, stuff like that used to drive me crazy. Now, for the most part, pro sports have kind of fixed themselves, so you don't have too many weird outliers, at least in the ones that I follow. I guess hockey's still got some weird stuff, but for the most part, you don't really see any kind of weird outliers in professional sports anymore when it comes to divisions. But the SEC is a mess when you got Missouri, who's among the farthest west of all the SEC schools. I don't know if it's farther west than Arkansas or not, but the fact that it's in the SEC East when it's in the Midwest is just annoying. And Auburn is essentially in the state of Georgia. I mean, it's just barely across the Alabama state line. The fact that it's in the SEC West is probably a little irritating, too. If I was going to do this, I'd actually go so far as to say, how about you move Missouri over to the West? You could probably do the same thing with Vanderbilt, which is technically in Nashville in the Central Time Zone, and maybe you bring Alabama and Auburn back over to the East. Now, the SEC East coaches would hate that because their schedule every year just got a lot tougher, but you would be able to preserve the Georgia-Auburn rivalry, the Alabama-Tennessee rivalry, without having to do any of this kind of weird games with the cross-divisional opponents. I'd be in favor of that, and I wouldn't have a problem playing Alabama every single year, but I'm sure that the other coaches in the SEC East probably would not like that. But we have officially reached the time of year when weird changes to college football are being promoted. Pat Dye, the latest to offer up his, and I'll take the bait and talk about it for a couple of minutes. Something else that I'll talk about here is something we actually talked about last week on Dog Nation Daily, and whatever fleeting hope Georgia may have had was fleeting indeed. We talked about Jonathan Giles, the wide receiver most recently of Texas Tech, who announced his transfer decision. He put out a top 10 recently that it didn't include Georgia, and listen, this guy was Texas Tech's leading receiver. If Georgia could have gotten him, this would have been a nice get for UGA, the kind of guy that when he was eligible in 2018 would probably step in and be able to play right away. As Jeff pointed out, though, last week on the show, he's not very big, so he's not exactly, you know, Kirby's prototypical wide receiver, but maybe a guy that could have played in the slot receiver, whatever. The point is, that conversation is completely irrelevant now because Giles has chosen LSU. Now, by my count, that is two former Texas Tech players in like the last month and a half who've transferred to LSU to go play for Ed Orgeron. You had Braden Fajoco, the defensive tackle, and now you've got Giles, the wide receiver. So that's a nice get for LSU to really walk into a Big 12 program and take essentially two of its top contributing players. Fajoco, who's probably an NFL defensive tackle, Giles, who was the leading receiver, and put them on the LSU roster starting in 2018. That's a pretty good get for Ed Orgeron. If he can win enough this year at LSU to kind of tide over the LSU fans, keep them patient, LSU could be in pretty good shape like 2018, 2019. The recruiting class is really looking strong for the Tigers for the 2018 cycle. You got these transfers becoming eligible. Still no quarterback, though. That doesn't ever seem to change for LSU. But a nice get in terms of this transfer wide receiver. We talked earlier about, Georgian's quarterback situation, what it's going to be doing. We've talked about that a lot on Dog Nation Daily, and thought that Zach Abelverde had an interesting piece up at SECCountry.com talking about Florida's continued pursuit of a couple guys in the state of Georgia. Emory Jones from Heard County, currently committed to Ohio State. Justin Fields from Cobb County, goes to Harrison High School, currently committed to Penn State. This is a really important thing to watch here. Obviously, as we've said before, Georgia is searching for its quarterback for the class of 2018 in a tough position because it doesn't have early playing time to offer. It's got kind of a log jam of elite players that we think have the potential of being elite, Eason the current starter, from the incoming freshman. It's hard to get another one of those guys to kind of go contribute to that depth unless it's the kind of program you're going to win a bunch of national championships and, have a straight pipeline into the first round of the NFL draft. It just becomes a bit of a tough sell. So Florida, even though it's the out-of-state program here, has an advantage that Georgia can't match. Florida really does not have a settled situation at quarterback. Malik Zaire may choose another school, but they're even looking to taking on a transfer here because apparently they're just not sold on Felipe Franks. That lack of certainty makes a guy like Fields or Jones believe they can come in and play very early there at Florida, which gives them a leg up on a quarterback like that. The problem, though, is that selling of early playing time to a top-flight quarterback has a way of making some other guys join that program as well. Quarterbacks have a tendency to be what we know as Pied Pipers, guys who bring other recruits with them. If you're a Georgia fan, this is one of those stories to watch. Just how close and cozy does Florida get with Fields and with Jones for the class of 2018? That'll be something to pay attention to, and we'll make that your SEC through. All right, I want to, as we close things out today, mention one more thing that Jeff Sintel had recently written about. I didn't get a chance to ask him about this today. We just sort of ran out of time. But I thought this was kind of interesting. Jeff had a chance to see Natori Johnson at the state track and field meets over the weekend. I guess Natori's been battling a little bit of an illness. Of course, Natori's going to be one of these incoming freshmen for Georgia, enrolling a little later on this summer. And one of those guys has a chance to compete for playing time along the offensive line as soon as pretty early this fall. And maybe because of illness or maybe because of how hard he's been working, it sounds like, according to Jeff, Natori's dropped some weight here. He's down to about 315 pounds, which is a little more in the range of where Kirby Smart and Sam Pittman would like to see Natori enroll. And it sounds like, you know, if he's able to really carry that weight and handle it appropriately, he might be one of those guys who gets a chance to play early. I've always said it was either the guard or one of the two tackles, Andrew Thomas and Isaiah Wilson. And Tori may be the safest bet right now. Thanks for being with us on Dog Nation Daily, and we'll see you again tomorrow.